coming in for points anyway.
Oh, the Eagles recovered a fumble at the 10.
Wow.
That is just the way it's gone. Four Dallas turnovers recovered by Cooper DeJean and a flag when the play is over.
Brad Sham, Babe Laufenberg with the call. This is your home of the Dallas Cowboys. It's a Cowboys Monday. Only two of them left. I'm Sean Treif alongside Cowboys insider Bobby Roberto Bell. Pepe, are you fist pumping because the thrill and excitement of the show, or that there's just two left?
Yes to both.
Oh, okay.
Just two games left, baby. But yes, the thrill of the show. We're 2 hours in.
And then Pepe texted us very good news for him and his schedule and for Bobby with his... it's not even undercover hatred, but his vitriol and nastiness towards Peyton's post-game scheduling. We got Commanders game time for this coming Sunday to end it all in Arlington.
A noon game in Arlington on Sunday. So, right. Bobby, I will be in work Monday morning.
There you go.
Will you be in Friday?
No, I won't.
No, you won't. Okay.
Because the noon game, you know, early pregame, I got to take off the day before, or 2 days before, I guess, you know.
Makes sense. He was... So you obviously have not been on the air since we got the news that he's engaged now.
Congratulations.
He did try on Monday. He tried to pull the whole little like, yeah, you still want to talk mess after I was taken off to get engaged? I was like, you took that day off before you decided to get engaged. He's like, well, that doesn't matter. He's like, yes, it does. Because it had nothing to do with the engagement.
Now, my disappointment with the engagement news, and I was a very prominent figure in the planning. Thank you.
You were. Well, he shouted you out. He gave you credit for helping him out.
People are telling me that there was zero surprise in it, Peyton. It was just one of those People magazine photo shoots where the paparazzi had been tipped off and she knew exactly what was happening because she was dressed pretty formal. My wife has taught me how to judge nails now with the nail gap. Did she just get the nails done? I mean, Peyton.
Well, look.
Did she know it was happening? Did you tell her?
I did not tell her the exact day. That was never told to her.
Did she know you had the ring?
Yes, but
she picked it.
Well, she picked the size and everything.
Well, it's different than if
you get one shot with this. Or at least I want to say I get one shot with
it. Last spittle.
Jeez.
He's gotten two.
No, but like she had always said, look, I know you want to surprise me with it, but I need to have my nails done. The hair needs to be done. So because if she's there with leggings on and a, you know, long t-shirt, she's like, I don't want to post this. I don't want to look like that when you're proposing to me. So I'm like, okay, that's fine with me. As long as she's fine with not having the surprise. Because if I had to surprise her, if she was like, surprise me with it, then I'll be, okay, I can come up with something. But she was fine with not being the surprise. I did not tell her that day, hey, today's the day. Get ready. Now, she had talked to her family and her sister and her mom and stuff. So they're like telling her, hey, you need to get your nails done this day and this day. So she can put two and two together. So that's why she figured it out. But I did not tell her, hey, T-minus 20 days, 15 days.
After you got the ring, did you tell her about that? Did she know that you had the ring in your possession?
Yes.
What are you doing? Can you just kind of keep your mouth shut? You erase every element of surprise? Because the word on the street that you got a big mouth now.
Well, no. I think it's more of her, some of her family that has a big mouth. But
oh!
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
No, because I had gone over to her parents' house and shown her mom and her dad and her sister the ring that, hey, I got it. You know, this is what it looks like. What do you think about it? And I think there was more of a conversation between the...
You think they told her?
I do, yes. Now, I'm not going to, you know, dog on the parents. You know, obviously, I know, but I'm going to try and backtrack a little.
Yeah, you need them to pay for the wedding, too.
I'm going to backtrack a little bit. You know, I love them, but yes, I do think there was more outside conversation. But I promise, I never sat there and said, Mackenzie, look, I have the ring. This is what it looks like. This is what I have.
But see, there's two types of people. If, mm-hmm. like, a
men
man...
Men and women.
Huh?
Men and women.
I'm not going to get into all that.
Mm-hmm. Kind
of. Shout out, Chris. Bobby's got the sickness. Jeez. Over here.
I can't laugh at anything without coughing.
There's those that, like, they're disappointed the surprise element is gone, and those that don't care. You strike me as you'd rather tell her. You don't care that the surprise element is ruined or not there.
Yeah, because, again, I want to fulfill everything that she has told me beforehand. Because, you know, because when she said, look, I want my nails done, hair done, that took everything of surprise out of it. And I was like, okay, I'm fine with that. I'm not going to, you know, have you wearing shorts and a T-shirt and then.
So did you tell her, like, time to get your nails done?
No, that was all her mom. Because I told her mom and sister, I said, hey, try and get her to go to get her nails and hair done, makeup, all that stuff done. Because she has said, look, I want to look like a girl whenever this all happens. So yeah. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, this is... There's definitely way too much information being shared here, because before you told us where you were proposing, I had heard where you were proposing.
Then again, that was from her.
I knew
her
where you were proposing that, before you told us you had decided on where it was going to be or again, like what day.
I'm learning all this stuff out just now, you know, or then, because I think that, again, I think her mom and her and Mackenzie talked a lot about it. So, you know what? Maybe I just need to stop telling her parents stuff.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Lay down the law. That's
learn
right,
from, learn from me.
After they pay for the wedding.
Yeah. 877-881-1053. Franklin Franco, injury attorney, text line. Cowboys get smoked 41-7. And Bobby, the NFC East streak, which I have sworn will end every year and will never, ever, ever happen again in the history of the National Football League, it continues.
20 years in a row.
Wow.
Without consecutive NFC East champs. And that, this is one of those notes where it's like, that doesn't even seem statistically possible.
Is that impressive? Does that speak more or less about the division? To me, it speaks less.
That's a good question. I mean, do we think it spoke more or less of the AFC East that the Patriots just won it for 15 years in a row? Yeah, and so, like, I mean, either way it does it.
Colts in their division with Peyton back in the day speaks less.
So you need to have...
It's not like we're alternating powerhouses.
Yeah, like, oh, 3 years here, and then oh, somebody else wins it for 2 years. Yeah, no, I could see that. And I think context, like Philly and Dallas, other than this year, the last couple of years, Philly and Dallas have been the two teams kind of jockeying. We've gotten a strong battle back and forth there. But yeah, 20 years in a row.
Washington and the Giants have been a joke.
The last time the NFC East was clinched for a consecutive time, it was the fourth in a row that the Eagles won on November 28th, 2004. So we're talking about it's over 20 years ago now.
Wow.
For a frame of reference to that date, here are some of the facts about November 28th, 2004. Jason Witten was 22 years old. And he was younger than every player currently on the Cowboys roster. He would be the youngest player for the Cowboys if that Jason Witten was on the team. Emmitt Smith and Jerry Rice still had not scored the final touchdowns of their careers. The most recent quarterback to start a game for the Cowboys was Drew Henson.
Oh, my.
Tony Romo wouldn't play in his first NFL game for another 2 years. On the roster, just wouldn't play. Cedric Wilson. Remember Cedric Wilson?
Of course.
Not just junior, but senior. Cedric Wilson's dad was still on his rookie contract with the 49ers.
Oh, I just knew the Miami receiver.
Yeah, the old Cowboys receiver. His dad. And Cedric Wilson Jr. has been in the NFL for 8 years now. His dad was on his rookie contract in San Francisco. Aaron Rodgers was playing for Cal. Gary Anderson, who has been eligible to collect Social Security for the past 3 years, was still playing. Drew Brees was with the Chargers. Eli Manning hadn't ever won a start, much less a Super Bowl. We were 2 days away from Ken Jennings finally losing on Jeopardy. Peter Jennings, Dan Rather, and Tom Brokaw were still the hosts of the Nightly News Network program.
Big three.
Bronny James was 7 weeks old. Facebook had fewer than 1 million active users. YouTube didn't exist. In fact, it wasn't even an idea yet. The way that YouTube became an idea was when one of the creators became frustrated he couldn't find clips of the tsunami that had hit in, was that India where that hit? But the tsunami, that big tsunami that hit 20 years ago, he was frustrated he couldn't find news clips of it quickly enough. And that was a month after the Eagles won the division. So YouTube hadn't
even
been
conceived. That's how YouTube got created?
That's where the idea started, was like, we got to have some hub where you can have videos to share. And so a lot of different things that occurred back then. We were a month removed from the bloody sock. That was right after the Red Sox had come back from down 3-0.
Is this something, if you were allowed to bet, per NFL Network rules, you would use this to bet on next year? Like, would you just say definitely the Cowboys or the Commanders will win the East?
Probably not. No, but,
yeah.
But I mean, it is one of those.
I feel like it's something you should never bet on, but here it is, automatic for 20 years.
Yeah, like, there's got to be, there's a handful of these that I bet if we thought about, we'd come up with, hey, there's nothing that says that you should lean on this as a, but it clearly just keeps happening. And that's what it's become a joke. Everybody says it like, well, I'm not going to pick XYZ team who won the division last year, because we know nobody wins the NFC East back-to-back, but I don't think anybody really believes it when they say it. They're being kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's every year it feels like, not just a different division winner, but you'll get something like, oh, Washington's better than Dallas. Nobody was picking Washington to be better than Dallas this year, even if they thought Dallas was going to struggle.
Yeah.
When the Giants popped up with Daboll the first year, nobody predicted they were going to be up there and playing as well as they did. So yeah, It seems unsustainable. I have no idea how this has continued on this long, but here we are.
877-881-1053 in order to hit us up on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line here on a Cowboys Monday. Below the Belt coming up at 8:40. Jerry Jones live at 8:30 tomorrow. WFAA with a story that Dak Prescott's fiance got hit as well. Her car, it looks like, was burglarized. So this happened with Luca days ago. Everyone safe and fine, which is the good news. But now WFAA, in a police report, Dallas police report, says Sarah Ramos's car was burglarized the day after Christmas. $40,000 worth of goods were stolen from the car.
Jeez.
She arrived at a Pilates class Thursday morning and that she quickly rushed inside due to the rain. Due to the haste, she forgot to lock her vehicle door. When she returned and entered the car after the class, the report says several pieces of property had been taken. The report says she was notified that her credit cards were being used at another location. The report detailed several pieces of property stolen, $40K, including designer handbags and wallets from Chanel, YSL, Gucci, Louis Vuitton, Prada, as well as computer software and cash. What's computer software?
Like the video setup within the car? Like, I don't know. Is this did they say what kind of car it is?
The incident occurred the day after Christmas. So add Dak's fiance to the list of Kelsey, Mahomes, Burrow, and Luca.
And this one at least sounds like it's not following the same pattern of, oh, okay, we know you're out of town playing a game, so we're going to target you. This one sounds more just like it was opportunistic with the car being left on.
Luca's house, they got a necklace worth $4,000, three earrings worth $14K, and four rings worth $5,000.
Does he wear earrings? I've never noticed him wearing earrings before.
No, why would you get three?
I don't know.
Three earrings.
In case you lose one, backup.
A backup. Ask, whose earrings Ruben. Did you send us? Who?
Ruben.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
did he have the Michael Irvin?
No, he had the George Michael, the little dangly ear. I called him Jorge Miguel when I saw it. That's what he's going by now. Have you ever had your car broken into?
Nope.
You, Peyton?
No, I have not.
I used to be super reckless when I lived, when I was still living at my dad's, not my mom's because she wasn't there. That's another thing. Last time,
you would have been real reckless with last time
somebody,
house.
Last time somebody won the division consecutive times, I had a mom.
gosh.
But I used to park the car and I would just, because I didn't want to forget my wallet, I would leave it right in the front seat and just walk inside. I'd lock the door, but I would leave my wallet just sitting there. If anybody passed by and like looked in there, they could say, oh, his wallet's there. They could just bust the window open and take it. I did that for years and never had an issue with it. And so I do get a little hesitant now. I used to always like leave the car running and run inside the gas station or whatever. And I was like, man, somebody's just going to grab this and drive off with it now.
Yeah. The NBA revealed the FBI has connected some burglaries to transnational South American theft groups that are reportedly well-organized, sophisticated rings that incorporate advanced techniques and technologies, including pre-surveillance, drones, and signal jamming devices. So maybe the drones in Jersey are just like checking out the Brooklyn Nets.
So this is a trans attack? Is that what you're saying?
What is the latest on the drones in Jersey?
I don't know. I hadn't seen an update on it.
All right. 877-881-1053. We're live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube here on DFW Sports Station. We have to talk about the college football quitting incident. Would this change your mind if you're the Giants or the Patriots or a team that could be looking at a top selection and a QB? Well, not New England, but Tennessee, Cleveland. What happened with the college football QB and did he actually quit? That, the rest of the NFL, and Below the Belt next on 105.3 The Fan.
A big tilt right there. Here comes Duchesne, has the man across, shot, score! Zadonoff from Duchesne. And Dallas has a 3-1 lead in Chicago.
ESPN with the call. After falling behind one zip, the Stars scored five straight to beat the Blackhawks in Chicago 5-1. Big nights for a few of the Stars forwards. Jamie Benn had 3 points. You heard Duchesne right there. He had three. Ottinger picked up his 17th win of the year in net. So up next, Gavin Spittle with this preview. The traditional New Year's Eve game at the AAC, it's against the Sabres. Winners of three in a row, they beat the Stars in Buffalo back in October. One other star's note, reports are they will get fined for players skating during the Christmas break. Teams are supposed to suspend all activities. Maple Leafs were fined $100K for leaving for a game the night before instead of that day per the CBA, so the Stars could get a $100,000 fine. What? Turn on your mic.
Yeah.
Oh. You know what, Peyton?
We good?
Good job. Oh. No, keep it off. And we're getting closer to one of the sports untouchable records. Ovechkin scored goal number 870 in the Caps loss to the Red Wings. Now 25 from breaking Gretzky's record for all-time goals. Wow. I was thinking about this with the records yesterday. Now you can turn on the mic because we're going to talk non-hockey a little bit.
74% on Money Puck, by the way.
The Saquon rushing record. How much do you care? How much you like, oh my gosh, we're seeing an all-time record here. The first thing I did in my mind, I'm like comparing the games, as I love that Eric Dickerson came out and said, no, I'm not rooting for him. No, I'm not rooting for Saquon to get 101 against the Giants.
72 Dolphins energy right there.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I don't think SMU can take a third kick to the nether region like they have with Clemson and Penn State in the last month. You also don't want to lose your record. But no, I think... I'd like to see. I'm always in favor of history being broken. I've talked about this before.
No, but are you going to look at it like, oh my God, like with this hallowed feel?
I think that's a pretty significant record. I didn't think in the modern, the way the NFL had trended in the last couple of years, I didn't think anybody was going to break that.
Right.
Like, I think one of the most untouchable records in sports is Emmitt Smith's record. Nobody's going to break Emmitt Smith's rushing record, I don't think. Because he finished with 18,355. That's 1,000 rushing yards 18 years in a row. There's people, running backs don't play more than 9 years anymore. Yep. They're going to get 2,000 every year. Like, that's an untouchable record. But I think it's a really impressive record. I see a lot of people dinging it already of 17 games. That, like, they're doing the Roger Maris asterisk thing.
How many games did Dickerson do his in?
16. But here's the way I look at it. We don't ding at all. Randy Moss broke the touchdown receiving record or receiving touchdowns in a season when he got 23. He did it in 16 games. Jerry Rice had 22. Jerry Rice did it in 12.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't talk about it like that.
Right.
In fact, Jerry Rice, that you're chopping over looking this up, he scored 22 touchdowns. He caught 62 passes. One out of every three catches he made that year was a touchdown. But, like, we don't talk about, did anybody say, I mean, I'm sure back then people were trying to discredit Hank Aaron all they could, but nobody talked about it. Hank Aaron broke the all-time home record in 400 more games than Babe Ruth. It doesn't matter. Like, the record's the record. Things evolve. They change over time. We can't just have 8 different record books for, like, well, this is the 12-game record. This is the 14-game record. So I think it's a big-time record, and I think it's completely poetic that he's going to end up breaking this against the Giants.
And that's all yesterday's second half felt like it was about. Let's get him going and get him closer. That was the Saquon show in the second half as he hit 2,000 yards on the year.
Did you agree with Choppy's take in the text about he thought it was maybe a little bush league that they were just trying to run it up with Saquon?
I didn't feel that. I didn't feel that in the game. I didn't agree with basically any of Choppy's takes yesterday, which is shocking and surprising as he is out on the roads right now giving us the traffic update that no one is out there.
No.
No one is out on the roads.
It's empty. I thought, because there were a couple tweets I saw where people were like, it's bush league.
I understand this. I understand what he's saying.
I totally get it. I think the Cowboys totally understand, too, what the scenario is, though. Yeah, he's trying to break a record. Like, we know if we were in the same position on our side and Rico Dowdle was close, we'd be telling him, give Rico the ball. Let him carry it 30 times in the second half.
Now, was it dumb? And will it be dumb? We're going to have that conversation later in the week. Is it dumb to play him against the Giants? I have an argument that they just shouldn't do it. I mean, it's an obvious and clear argument, but I may raise a major ruckus about that. There was a ruckus the other night with the Mavericks that the whole NBA world's talking about.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's another one. Yeah, two offensive fouls on Nurkic. Oh, my goodness. Ooh. Oh, Najee Marshall and Yusuf Nurkic. There probably are going to be ejections. There might be a suspension moving forward.
And there was Mark Folliwell and Kendrick Perkins and us. I think we're agreeing for the first rare time in a while when it comes to Big Perk. The NBA suspended Najee 4 games. Nurkic got 3. And wasn't Nurkic involved in one of the Draymond incidents?
I believe so,
Made me side with Draymond here for a second. Nurkic swung first.
Yeah.
Now, here comes PJ, which everyone loves, shoving Nurkic to the ground. But PJ got suspended as well. But Najee got more games than Nurkic.
It's ridiculous that Najee gets more. This is like, I guess Rougned Odor threw the punch first against Bautista. But it was almost like Odor got punished more just for being the guy who won the fight. So same sort of thing. Mavericks win the fight, so they get it. They get the screws put to them because there's no way Najee Marshall should get more. This was clearly Nurkic instigating, I felt like. Marshall was just standing up and trying to defend him. But then for PJ Washington to get anything for a shove, how many times do we see a shove in an NBA game?
Yeah, but he went to the ground. That made it. I get something.
I'm sorry, he's an awkward 7-footer that doesn't know how to maintain his balance. That's silly that he got. Fine him, but don't suspend PJ Washington. And four games is way too much for Najee Marshall. But as we learned this offseason when you guys talked to Antonio Daniels, Najee Marshall's also got an enforcer track record that the league might be taking into consideration.
And Kyrie talking about the fight, because there was like this zoom in on social media. It was amazing of Kyrie, like, oh my God, what is happening? What is happening? Here's Kyrie talking about it.
Yeah, I was a little confused. It happened so quickly, but moments like that, just want everybody to be protecting themselves. And I feel like that's what PJ was doing for Najee after he got hit. He was just protecting himself. And you know, if we're out on the street, even though we're not playing out in basketball, you gotta put your hands up and at least swing back. So I'll take care, it's fine. Whoever's watching, PJ's fine, their injections. But it's part of basketball sometimes. Haven't seen it. So maybe that's just the way we end 2024, where somebody actually swings in the NBA. Maybe that help our ratings.
How about that line? Kyrie talking about fighting in the NBA, maybe that will help our ratings.
That's a good line. I like that. I like in general though, I love the
Joe Mazzulla was right, because there was a fight yesterday where Tyler Hero got slammed to the ground. Wasn't Joe Mazzulla and the Celtics talking about we just need to unleash everyone really fight?
Yeah, because Joe Mazzulla is a psycho. That's part of that problem. But I love the in professional sports. Like we talked about AJ Brown earlier. Like, did he have the awareness that he was throwing somebody such a... I love the universal awareness in sports of just like, if you stick up for the star is paying for your fine. Like, whether it be Dak did that for Lyle Collins in the past when Lyle stood up for him. I love just the, it's one of the few things that still feels a little old school about sports that maybe, that's a little toxic. You're encouraging fighting, you're doing these things. But I love whenever it's just understood, you go to bat for the star, and when you go to bat for the star will take care of you.
One more thing, it was probably one of the most applauded and liked things on my Instagram account over the last month. Last note on the Suns, Matt Ishbia announced the new concession prices. This is like the Atlanta Falcons of the NBA. The Suns are going $2 hot dogs, $2 waters, $2 sodas, $2 chips, $2 popcorn. Family of four used to spend $98 on hot dogs, water, and popcorn. Now, $24. So props to the Suns owner.
It's fantastic. And I always, Kristen, like, hates it. She's so funny, but she'll, like, pull up YouTube sometimes and she'll see a video that's like stock footage of a McDonald's in 1990 or something. She doesn't, like, even eat there. And she clicks on it. And she's just scanning because she wants to see what the menu says the prices are. And she'll just pause. She's like, do you see that? Do you see how cheap things were back then? Oh, my gosh. We could have eaten there for $4. We could have fed everyone. And she's
like, that's why Jimmy Carter's my guy. Rest in peace. And Luka reevaluated in a month after the left calf strain he suffered on Christmas Day. Luka out for a month.
First couple games, though, Kyrie's going off. Like, Kyrie's clearly just, all right, this is all on my shoulders now. He's playing ridiculous right now.
He had... Where are the numbers? I just had it.
40 points and 5 3-pointers.
Yeah, but he had a Dirk mark. Here it is. 46 points against Portland. 20 in the fourth. 5 threes. Passes Dirk. Second most games with 40 points and 5 threes in franchise history. So there it is. Everything you need to know about the Mavs and the Stars.
Would you ever have anticipated that we would have the approval ratings for Kyrie Irving here that we do as of this moment?
Never. Never.
I never thought there was a chance.
I love listening to him talk about the fine, especially the S word that Peyton didn't bleep.
This is why he has to take off after games.
Let's get to this Cam Ward incident. This thing took over and blew up. What happened?
Dude, so I hate this. And this is maybe this.
We got two of the top two quarterbacks in the news. Shador wearing New York Giants cleats, which everyone said, Look at his bowl game performance. His life fell apart as soon as he donned anything New York Giants related. Giants, by the way, falling from 1-4 in the draft yesterday, and now this.
I wish Choppy was here right now, because this is definitely something Choppy would defend, and I would want to have a fight about this. Cam Ward made NCAA history the other night in the first quarter of the Pop-Tarts Bowl. He threw a...
Man, did these Pop-Tarts... were like the most viral college football thing of the weekend. Everyone was in love with this marketing.
Well, and it helped cover over just Cam Ward's awful decision. So Cam Ward throws a 4-yard touchdown pass with 4:12 left in the first quarter to Jacoby George. And it's like, okay, that's why does that matter? Well, that made NCAA history. He passes Case Keenum for the Division I record for most touchdown passes in the history of Division I. And so he finished with 3 touchdown passes in the first half, got him up to 158. As was the plan, Emery Williams started and played the second half for Miami, which went on to lose 42-41. I hate this. If you want to opt out, I do not blame somebody who wants to opt out of bowl games to protect their career, do whatever else. Fine. Totally get it. I don't blame somebody who goes, I want to be in there with my brothers. I want to be there with the team. We're still fighting for something. This is about brotherhood or whatever else. I'm going to play the game. I don't fault anybody for either one. When you are 1 foot in, 1 foot out, and going, I want to get my record, and then I'm going to sit out the second half of a game that we lose by one. Because
so you would have rather him just not even play the whole game?
Either don't play or play the whole thing.
Because there would have been some honor in not going for the record and then bailing.
Right. Exactly. And it's something where, or even if you go for the record, I don't fault you if you then stay in and you fight and you remain in the game with your teammates. But I don't even care that it was playing of like, well, we were giving them the first half. And then it still strikes me as incredibly self-serving. And I know Choppy doesn't care about anything except what's on the calculator or whatever else is in there. But to me, this is definitely one of those intangible things that if I'm an NFL team, like, I would press him on this. Even if I don't care about it much, I want to see how he talks about it, how he justifies it, just to see his thought process. But I think this is weak. I think this is it. Am I overreacting here?
No, I don't think you're overreacting. The thing that I always wonder if we overreact to is the next step of how much does this really punish a kid? How much is someone bailing on his team or not playing the bowl game? We talk about the competitive nature. How much does that actually play? And Will Chambers, do you have a comment on this? Oh my gosh, Will Chambers is Willie. In the house today. What up, Will?
Hey, buddy. Hi. Hey, guys. Hey, all right, so I got one question because I totally agree with the premise of it being like, I don't think it's an overreaction at all.
We agree on a college quarterback.
But
wow.
How about this? Because I've been thinking about it for a few days. If Saquon Barkley, let's say Philadelphia, with nothing to play for, goes for the record with Saquon Barkley, and then he gets it, sits the rest of the game. Is it any different than Cam Ward?
That's interesting.
That's a good question.
I would say the only difference,
because we're not caring at all if Saquon gets 102 Sunday against the Giants and then sits in the second half.
Right.
I guess the
because the bowl game doesn't really matter, really.
I do. Yeah,
left his brothers out there.
I do look at it, I guess, and it's probably just my own. It's my own
belt bias.
It's being hypocritical, probably. I look at it differently, I guess, because I consider it, if you're going out there and you're trying to just finish Saquon Barkley, like it's not like Saquon Barkley's leaving after that, or Saquon Barkley's leaving guys high and dry who are in a competitive situation who are still trying to win. So I view the context as different.
But you're protecting for the next round, too, of your Philly.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I think it's not apples to apples, but that's the way I was trying to like think
of
it.
No, it's not a bad comparison.
Like, I originally was like, this is so selfish and just like it seems emblematic of what we see in college football, but at the end of the day, I don't care about bowl wins unless they mean something, they're going towards something. So the game, is that any different than a game that doesn't matter for a team that like Kansas City this weekend, right? And then that's where I was like, all right, I got to think about it maybe a little bit
differently. I think Barkley's assuming a greater career risk playing though too, and then the Eagles are taking on a greater risk having to play. This is the end of Miami season. This is supposed to be, all right, here's our bowl game, our opportunity to win, do whatever. Like, I think that there's, I just feel like there's more than that. I'm probably trying to do gymnastics here.
No, I can't explain.
I don't know how you guys do it, you know, on your shows. We have a clock and we can talk and crosstalk. Okay. Get out. What else is Bobby hearing about the other Mike in Frisco. That's next and Below the Belt right here on The Fan. The great Bobby Belt.
Bobby Belt is an idiot.
Don't make me take off my belt.
Don't make me take off my belt.
We're not.
Over to you, Bobby.
Second and 12 at the 25. McKee throws a slant at the 20. There's no defender in sight. This is going to be run into the end zone easily by Devontae Smith. Nobody somehow was covering Devontae Smith.
Let's assume Mike McCarthy is back, as that seems to be where it's heading. Who else should come back?
I did not think you were going to say this publicly. Well, you heard over the weekend, but that is why you are a Cowboys insider. When you put in the email, I said, green light.
I do think the more you talk to people, it feels like everybody's sense around the team is like he's going to be back. And not like any sort of like, yeah, I guess he's back. They're like, yeah, just objectively. Sense everybody.
There's no other noise happening.
No. And maybe... maybe the silence is all they're reading there. Maybe they've gotten an inclination from Mike. Maybe they've gotten an inclination from the Joneses. Don't know the context of it, but I just know the sense from people is he's going to be back. And not just like a, well, it's kind of 50-50. Nick Eatman came on with us on Friday. You remember he said a couple weeks ago, under 50%? Nick, when he came on with us the other day, he said 65% he's back. So Nick was starting to move on it.
And what are you now after you doubled... such a bold move by you going from 1% to 2% that he's coming back. Now what are you?
70.
Whoa!
Something like that.
70.
I mean, I'll leave it out because, I mean, they got shellacked yesterday. Do they get completely embarrassed next week? Does that somehow change it? I don't know. Like, but, I mean, it definitely does feel like that's where it's heading. And you talk to people who nobody has an awareness of what are they going to do. Nobody knows that plan other than the Joneses. And the Joneses would probably tell you, we haven't made any decisions, so nobody knows what we're going to do. But really, just the Joneses would probably be the only ones who know their plans for how they're approaching McCarthy and where they're leaning. And so everybody's just kind of reading tea leaves around the star or around their conversations and different things like that. But the sense seems to be... I haven't talked to anybody in the last week who, when I've asked them, where do you think this is heading... I haven't talked to anyone who has said they think he's out. Everyone has said, even if they're like, I'm leaning this way, or no, I definitely think he's back. Everybody is saying to some extent, I think he's back. So now the question becomes, 2-year deal? 3-year deal? Are you back as the offensive coordinator? If you're not back, or who's hiring the coordinator? Is it you? Is it, like, there's a bunch of different questions there. But everybody pretty much is out of contract on the coaching staff. There may be... I don't want to say which one I think it is because I don't know with certainty. I think there may be one coach on the staff who is under contract past this year. But it does make you look at, okay, where are some areas where you might see the Cowboys make some changes then? Because I don't think the Joneses would want this. I don't think they would want to say, yeah, all of you come back. No, I think they would definitely say somebody needs to answer for some of this.
Yeah, I think they try to sell that to the fan base a little bit too.
Yeah.
We're going to shake it up with some. Not everyone can just
Mike's
coast.
Not calling the plays, or this guy's gone, or, oh, we changed this. You guys were upset with that position group. Well, we changed the coach. Like, yeah, absolutely. I think that's an effective sell. One of the things that I think we're going to end up with, the other sense you're kind of getting from people is Zimmer will not be back, is the feeling for a lot of people.
Whoa.
But not like, I don't think it
would be. He's the one that fans have wanted back more than McCarthy.
I don't think it would be something where the Cowboys would push him out. I don't think it would be something where Zimmer would go take another job. I think there are a lot of people who just feel like Zim might be a little tired. Like, just, man, this was an exhausting year. This took, you know, you're getting older and it's a lot of work.
You think he might want to step away?
Yeah. I think he may make that decision and just say, you know what, this is just, it was good to come back to Dallas, have kind of a homecoming, do some things. But after a year of getting a chance to see this, and I think he's been stimulated in a sense. I think he loves working with Micah. I think that's, if you want to talk about one of the big positives of this year that I did not anticipate, them getting along as well as they have is fantastic. We talked about it this offseason. You had mentioned it. Micah had maturity questions, and Micah has had questions about how much do you buy into what your job is? Because it goes back to the Leighton Vander Esch quote on Hard Knocks, where when they were on the sideline, he was talking about how he wanted to go after it in the Hall of Fame game. And he goes, I just want to make a play. And Leighton goes, you got to know which play is yours to make, though.
Yeah.
And that's it. That was, Leighton got killed for it at the time. where fans were saying, "Oh, this is, look, see, he doesn't want to go after the ball." It's like, no, Leighton knows his role within the defense. What he's supposed to do, he knows he's going to hang somebody out to dry if he doesn't do his job, and that's exactly what Micah had some trouble understanding. Zimmer gets a lot of credit from people for helping instill that in Micah in a way that, as good of a coach as Dan Quinn was for Micah Parsons, Dan Quinn never got that to Micah. He was never able to get Micah to fully embrace, I'm going to just set the edge here. Ball's not coming my way, but I'm not going to chase the ball. This is what I'm supposed to do. Oh, I'm going to make sure that this is my responsibility. I'm setting the edge. So even though Lamar Jackson's eye candy and he's running over here, like, I got to stay here until the rules say I have to break. And so Zimmer gets a lot of credit for that, and something that I think has made Parsons a better overall player. But let's look at some of the assistant coaches. And the one that I feel like is always, outside of coordinators, the sexiest position, or not sex, the most discussed position, is the offensive line coach.
Yeah.
That people always look at that one, and I think they feel like that's the position coach that has the greatest impact on the unit, because they are so, they're a core group. They feel like they're kind of isolated from everybody else in terms of their responsibilities. And there's so much that distinguishes different coaches in terms of technique and different things like that. So when I just say to you, and I don't think it's as easy as just saying, well, he's the position coach. So anybody who's played well,
yeah,
in his favor. Anybody who's played worse, against him. But
by the way, Jerry infuriated, before you ask the question, he infuriated a lot of people when he talked about, I think this was Friday with KMC, how he got over the skis on the two young kids.
Oh, yeah.
Tyler Guyton to replace Tyron Smith and BB to replace Biotish said both have done well, but we paid the price to some degree.
Yeah, said
that it, you made the offensive line too green.
And Jerry, as he often does, put it on his shoulders. He goes, I think I expected too much out of them. And he said, I think what you see is just, you see the normal progression of a rookie right here.
Yeah.
Basically said, we've been spoiled by plug and play offensive linemen in the past, and that's not the norm. Which, some of that's fair, but also you expect, I think, in some areas to see better progress in certain areas. So if I were to say Mike Solari's work, I think he's given a lot of credit. I think people give him a lot of credit for Brock Hoffman. I think people feel like that's his guy. I think he gets a lot of credit for Cooper Beebe, who has progressed and is playing well now. And I think he gets credit for helping to bring TJ Bass along. Now, if you'll notice, it's all on the interior.
Yeah.
All of those guys are on the interior.
Though I feel like we have not killed Steele as much as I was anticipating this year. We've not criticized him. We're not coming in here killing Terrence as much as last year.
Yeah, and it wasn't great in the first half of the season. I didn't feel like he's gotten so much better in the last couple weeks. Yesterday was not great.
And why do you think that is?
I think he's playing more comfortably within himself. Because I think you're definitely seeing, when you watch him on tape, I think you're seeing subtle technique changes in terms of the way he's using his length, his hands, and it makes me wonder. I think a lot of what we saw, it looks similar to what he was doing in the past, which Joe Philbin was a big Terrence Steele guy. He gets a ton of the credit for Terrence Steele was his guy. That's part of that development was Joe Philbin. I think there have been some who have felt like Mike Solari has stunted some of Steele.
So maybe Terrence like kind of went back to his own techniques.
Yeah, like almost like just settled back into what he was comfortable with.
Yeah.
And so if you look at it and say Solari is credited with Bass, Hoffman, BB, interior, but he needs to answer for
Guyton.
Why is Guyton coming along slowly? Why is a veteran like Chuma Edoga at times not seem to know where his responsibilities are, or different things like that? Why is Terrence Steele seem like he's stunted a little bit or maybe regressed coming back from his injury?
Yeah.
And again, all tackles, all guys on the outside. Awesome Richards. A lot of people feel like he plays better when he's inside as opposed to outside. So is there something about Solari's better coaching up interior guys? Struggles with tackles? Is there? I think that that's one of the questions. But Solari, just in a vacuum, would you say, I'm going to take the value that I've gotten on how he's brought up these other guys and trust that the tackles are going to improve? Or you can say, I can't ignore how the tackles have had their struggles. I need a new offensive line coach.
I'm torn. Because the outside is what's supposed to be the most important.
Yeah,
I need the left tackle to be number one in terms of the development and how they're coming along. But does Guyton have the improvement or the intangibles within, in terms of the work ethic, the improvement, all the things that the interior offensive linemen have shown? I don't know.
I thought you were going to ask me for a grade, and I probably would have said like C+. C or C plus.
I think C is fair because I think you've got equal measures of good and bad that he's contributed. So
I don't know. I would have to know what type of worker Tyler Guyton. I would have to know what type of person he really is. You know what I mean? Versus just blaming Solari. Fake inside opinion I would have. You would know that better.
No, but I mean, I think that it is fair to say that he's credited with some of these guys.
Like, look what Rico Dowdle has done.
Yeah. And I don't think anybody...
Like, Rico Dowdle just hit 1,000 yards. Don't I have to give a lot of that credit to the offensive line coach?
So this is not a criticism at all of the offensive line coach or the running back coach. So anybody out there who may be listening, don't take it as such. I don't think that the opinion of a lot of people is that Rico Dowdle's success is attributed to either the running back coach or the offensive line coach. I think they believe that Rico Dowdle's success is... This is kind of who the player that he is. This is more about opportunity, and he's healthier. Like, and he's...
Yeah, but he still has to run through the holes created.
Right, but there are a lot of times where you watch it, where you go, that doesn't look like that was much. Or, oh, he's getting hit, and he's staying on his feet, and a lot of his yards are after contact. And so I think a lot of people just feel like that's the player that he is, and he just hasn't been healthy.
And here's Rico yesterday, despite the loss, hitting 1K.
It definitely feels good. Definitely a landmark I wanted to hit. But like you said, not the outcome. Wish it was a different outcome with it. Had a fumble, but definitely satisfying getting it, reaching that landmark.
Yeah, and it's something that was important to them. You heard the offensive line talking about it, too. They wanted to get him there.
And what's your answer to the Solari question?
I don't think Solari should return.
Why?
Because I think the Guyton thing is the most important factor here. Where, how is Guyton coming along? It doesn't look like it's coming along great right now. And I don't think initially, I think he came around, but I don't think initially in the evaluation process, he was a big fan of Guyton. And I think he came around to it. Look, I think we've said it directly. If we haven't said it directly, then it's kind of an open secret around the Cowboys. Joe Philbin never wanted Tyler Smith. Joe Philbin did not like Tyler Smith. Didn't think he was a good player. I don't think did anything to help bring him along at all. And so that's why it's dangerous to sometimes see progression or regression and just automatically assign it to the coach.
Yeah.
Because there's no time. Now, one area where I think confidently we can say they deserve credit. If you talk about two guys I think you absolutely should bring back, no matter who the new defensive staff is, if Zimmer's out or whatever else, Jeff Scania and Greg Ellis, your defensive line coaches. Ellis mainly worked with the edge rushers. Scania worked with the defensive tackles. I think if we were talking about where's an area of this team that's really overperformed this year, it's the defensive line. Mozzie Smith has bounced back after we thought he was teetering on the brink of just being broken.
Yeah.
Oso Odighizuwa has played some of his best football. Chauncey Golston, Carl Lawson has had a resurgence. Those two coaches get a lot of credit when you talk to people. Just like, yeah, those are good coaches that they know how to get the most out of people. Greg Ellis, really quickly, we'll finish with this. Greg Ellis had one of the most interesting interactions I've ever seen, or did one of the most interesting things I've ever seen from an assistant coach earlier this season. It was after Baltimore, I think. And Micah was standing up there doing media. And Micah was, you could tell he was starting to get a little frustrated. He was emotional after the game, and he was starting to teeter. I think this was the Baltimore game. Greg Ellis saw the group of reporters around him. Never seen an assistant coach walk over and stand behind there so he could listen to how Micah was talking. And then he heard Micah start teetering a little bit, and he was like, you guys got to wrap him. Like, he's going to get himself in a hole. Like, didn't say it, but you could tell that's what he was saying. And then he pulled Mike aside, gave him a pep talk. He looks out for those players in a way that I've never seen a coach do before.
Below the belt on a Cowboys Monday after they get blasted by Filthy 41-7 here with Sean Shreve and our Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. Are the Giants still getting their quarterback? And are these coaches about to be fired after this last weekend? Around the rest of the NFL and the NFC East next.